Now, Milton, don't be greedy. Let's pass it along and make sure everyone gets a piece.
Okay, but last time I didn't receive a piece. And I was told that
just pass.
The ratio of people to cake is too many.
Welcome to the 101st episode of Egg Timer Philosophy. I'm your host, Eric Roark, and today, armed with what I hope is a better microphone to make the audio quality a bit better for listeners, I'll be taking a look at the relationship between economics and normative or ethical value. While it's not always the case, it's often the case that the study of economics usually either treats ethics as something on the periphery of the discipline or in another orbit entirely. That's not to say economists don't care about ethics. It's just to say they often don't think that what they are doing depends upon some type of ethical foundation that is essential to their discipline. The general approach of most contemporary economists is that they're engaging in a descriptive endeavor which considers the inputs and outputs of market-based forces either on a macro or micro scale. This hasn't always been the standard approach of economists. Adam Smith, for example, a thinker many see as the historical spark for market-based economic approaches, saw a very clear connection between moral sentiment and economic activity. And for him, morality was never far from his treatment of economics. But if you've ever taken a course in economics, you know that considerations of normative or ethical value in a standard econ class are usually few and far between if they ever occur at all. I don't want to say that's always true. There are probably some exceptions out there. But it's fair to say that most economists are generally content to say that their economic analysis isn't a product or result of ethical assumptions or foundation. This is a major oversight in the way that the study of economics is often approached today, and we can start here with the basic idea that at core, economics is concerned with evaluating the distribution of scarce resources. And again, if you recall back to that econ class you might have taken, this is what all those supply and demand charts were all about. The discipline is concerned with who gets what under conditions of scarcity. The idea of scarcity here, right off the bat, is extremely important. If a resource is abundant, meaning anyone can, with little or no effort, have as much as they want of the resource, then the resource isn't subject to any interesting analysis of who gets what. People under conditions of abundance just get as much as they want, case closed. A wonderful situation to be in, but no economics is really occurring there. Things get more interesting when a resource is scarce. Only then does the question of who gets what become interesting and relevant. And scarcity means human conflict, or at least it sets the stage for human conflict. And it's only against a backdrop of conflict that economists and others can really consider who gets what. So even at this initial point, where human conflict marks the starting point of economics, ethical considerations are built into any interesting discussion of the discipline. When a position is offered about who gets what, an answer there is only one that, by necessity, is addressing the conflicts associated with scarcity. But again, when I think back to the econ courses I took in college, and when I talk to others about their econ courses, surprisingly, there was just no chapter or week devoted to thinking about the conflict owed to scarcity that underlies any interesting economic analysis. This oversight isn't a product of whatever prevailing economic approach is adopted, and there are a lot of approaches to adopt. One can be a socialist economist. There are a few of them in Western universities, but not many. Or someone might embrace a much more popular capitalistic market-based approach to decide who gets what. But either way, whatever approach someone takes, scarcity and the conflicts that arise from it will have to be present. And as the economist offers a view about how to best account for scarcity, they have no choice but to tread into ethical waters, or else they're just swimming in a pool with no water, offering a view with no tangible foundation. Now, there are a lot of approaches that can be given to deciding the question of who gets what and how. Economics can go in a lot of directions here, but all must start from an ethical foundation. Some of these foundations are more plausible than others. Let's start with an implausible one. We could just say that might makes right, and who gets what ought to be decided on the grounds of who is willing to use violence or physical strength to get whatever they want. That is an economic theory of distribution. No one endorses it because it has a clearly busted ethical foundation. Even if that approach was an efficient way, under some measure of efficiency, of deciding who gets what, no one would endorse it because it's deeply ethically flawed. To say an economic system is based upon efficiency is a ruse. Efficiency is always a measure of something else, and so it can't serve as a foundation for anything. Be leery, I'd say, of those who treat efficiency as an end or something intrinsically good. This is only done by someone who fundamentally misunderstands what efficiency actually is. The clear problem with a might makes right approach to economic distribution pushes almost all market-supporting capitalists to say that the foundation of economic exchange is that of free and voluntary exchange. And the story behind this tends to go like this. Free and voluntary exchange creates a competitive economic environment that gives people more options of higher quality goods and enables greater economic productivity. Now, without evaluating if you think that's a true or false story, it is a heavily adopted story, and it's worth just stopping to note just how many ethical considerations are built into that basic economic account. Now, that approach has a lot more going for it than the might makes right approach. But that's only because the idea of free and voluntary exchange is a far superior idea ethically to deciding who gets what than saying whoever is physically stronger gets it. But just like with conflict, it's rare to see economists who endorse the idea, and there are many who do, spend much time actually figuring out what a free and voluntary exchange is. Maybe this is often brushed over because there's a working assumption by many that it's just obvious what it means to engage in a free and voluntary exchange. But actually, it isn't obvious at all what constitutes a free and voluntary exchange. There's a lot of literature out there with a lot of different answers to that question. Maybe a voluntary exchange is one where no one involved with the exchange suffers from coercion. That's a solid idea, but then time needs to be spent on forming a view about coercion. Again, like the idea of voluntariness, coercion does not have some obvious meaning. Consider this example. Is a person coerced if they feel pressure to go to a job that they absolutely hate in order to make rent to avoid homelessness? Most economists and many others will likely say, well, no, probably not. That's not coercion. You did voluntarily go to the job. You were under a bit of distress, maybe, but coercion, maybe not. And you participated in the labor market. And we can study those markets under the purview of economics. Contrast that with a case of someone who hands over their wallet to a mugger. There, most people, economists included, will say, oh yeah, that's coercion. That exchange wasn't voluntary. That was just a crime, not legitimate economic activity. Fair enough, that could be the right answer in both cases. But what account of coercion makes the pressures of homelessness less of an affront to a person's voluntary action than the threats of the mugger? That economic account may be able to be given, but it would take at least an entire episode, if not two, to begin to offer a decent account of what constitutes coercion. My point for this episode is that this needs to be given, or else we wind up with an economic approach that looks a lot like Swiss cheese and again lacks that foundation. There is no obvious notion of free and voluntary action that underwrites almost all contemporary market-based economic approaches. This is an issue that we can only settle with careful ethical analysis and consideration. As a thought experiment, simply imagine any case in which the distribution of a scarce resource is settled and see if you can come up with any scenario that bypasses ethical considerations and is able to achieve this without them. I don't think you can. Say, here's just one example. Say you have an office party at work, and there's only so much cake for so many people. You might think back to that opening clip now from the film Office Space. Maybe we say whoever gets there first gets the cake first. Okay, that method of distribution gives an ethical priority to the idea that the early bird gets the worm, and those first in line should get first choice of cake. Maybe we decide cake distribution by some type of random draw determined by luck. That would be weird, but in that case, we would be deciding that luck would be a better way to decide things than alternative approaches. Maybe we cut an equal amount for everybody and ensure that everyone gets an equal share of the cake regardless of their spot in line, and we don't even need a line at all at that point. So in that case, our ethical principle wouldn't be first come, first serve, or abiding by the fates of luck. It would be equality. And the list of possible methods of distribution goes on and on. But the common feature is always that economics does not get off the ground and realize its potential without first establishing an ethical foundation. Until next time on Egg Timer Philosophy, we're wishing you good philosophical vibes.
What kind of hippie are you? What kind of hippie am I, man? I'm a business hippie. I understand the concept of supply and demand.